This is your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. Our topic is whistleblower laws, QI-TAM cases, and protections for whistleblowers. My guest is William Jungbauer, a board-certified civil trial specialist by the National Board of Trial Advocacy, the president and senior partner in the law firm of Yeager and Jungbauer, barristers in St. Paul, Minnesota. He's a former chair of the Association of Trial Lawyers of America, the Railroad Law Section. He practices nationally on railroad injury cases and whistleblower cases. And you'll have a chance, if you're listening to the live program, to talk with him in a little bit. This segment of Your Legal Rights is made possible by the National Board of Trial Advocacy, which also funds the NPR satellite uplinking of the program nationally. Additional funding of the program is provided by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar and the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. Bill, are you there?
Yes, I am, Chuck.
How is St. Paul today?
Today, our weather's pretty darn good, but all things considered, I wish I was in San Francisco. I love your city.
Well, hey, you got to come here, and we'll have you in the studio. Bill, let's start this way, if you would. Give us a little rundown, simple rundown of whistleblower laws. What does it mean? And then who has the rights of these? Who are the defendants, et cetera, et cetera?
Wow. Okay.
That'll take the first hour. Then we'll go into the second hour. Go ahead.
All right. The way I like to explain it is that there are whistleblowers. We've all heard of them. Whistleblowers are people that see or know of something wrong and try to do something to correct it. Normally, it's something. It can be either the government or it can be a corporation, company. And whistleblowers are normally employees who have knowledge. And there's really a great number, when I say great number, there's under the what I call offensive and defensive whistleblower rights laws. And by defensive, what I mean is if you're a whistleblower and you complain about something, safety or something that's wrong, we call that protected activity or report an injury. You can be covered under a number of different laws if you are retaliated against, if you're harassed, if you're blacklisted, demoted, disciplined, fired or laid off, intimidated, threatened, reduced pay, suspension. All these different things are called, when the company takes an adverse action is what we call it, or retaliation. And that's so if a company does that to someone or threatens someone who's an employee who's trying to make something right, these employees have significant rights.
And what does it mean? What can they do if there is a lawsuit about this? I know there is something called QI-TAM, Q-U-I, and then the next word is T-A-M. Which essentially, as I understand it, and I thought it was very interesting as I did some research on this, the translation is, or what it originally meant was, he who sues for the king as well as for himself. What
yes.
does QI-TAM mean today in today's economy and our society?
QI-TAM is a wonderful concept, but you have to dot all the I's and cross all the T's. It's also been called Lincoln's Law because QI-TAM has been around since about the Civil War, where the federal government was very concerned about people defrauding the government. And they wanted to incentivize individuals who took the risk of reporting fraud on the government not only protecting their jobs and protecting all their rights, but actually giving them financial rewards. So the QI-TAM, or what I also call, or what's also called False Claims Acts, and there are both federal and state False Claims Acts. Not every state has them, but California does, and I could talk to you about that in a minute. So when you talk about QI-TAM, or False Claims Acts cases, those are cases where an employee learns about some type of fraud, either in the government or to the government using government funds. If a corporation gets government funds and then misuses them, be it Medicaid, be it construction funds, anything. There are significant financial rewards for that that I can explain. So the two really types of whistleblower laws that I would say is the defensive ones, where someone is not reporting specific financial fraud where they can get a reward, but what they're doing is they're protecting themselves either from some type of adverse action or threat. And I'll start with that one. What those are is for people in all different types of industries, just to give you a short list here, some, and most of these are enforced by OSHA, and there's different laws, and they have different statutes of limitations or days in which you have to alert OSHA or file an initial complaint or you lose your rights. For instance, there's one on Asbestos Hazard Emergency Response Act, that's 90 days. Clean Air Act, 30 days. CERCLA, Comprehensive Environmental Response Compensation Liability, 30 days. Consumer Financial Protection Act, 180 days. Goes all the way down on Federal Railroad Safety Act for railroad workers, and I'll give you some strong examples about that in a minute, 180 days. Federal Water Pollution Control Act, only 30 days. Safe Drinking Water, 30 days. Sarbanes-Oxley, 180 days. FDA Food Safety, 180 days.
Bill, let me interrupt you for a moment if I can.
Sure.
One of the things I think that the average employee would be very concerned about, and I think that this is a very, very practical thing. What recommendation do you have for an employee, whether that person works for the government or a big corporation, whatever the case may be, who sees something that's going wrong here? Maybe the government is doing something that is in violation of the law, or there's a problem of safety, or maybe embezzlement, or whatever it may be, or it may be that someone works for some big corporation such as a railroad and sees it as a real safety problem. But this person, this employee, is concerned, gee, if I complain to the proper authority, I'm afraid of retaliation. I'm afraid I'm going to be fired. I will not have a salary. I will have, in this economy that we have, I'll be very concerned about my economic survival. What do you say to someone, or what would you recommend, or what would you suggest to someone who's faced with that problem?
Well, I do face that regularly, and there are different answers based on different fact situations and the different laws. For instance, I can give you just an overview in railroad law. If an employer does one of these harassment, a railroad does one of these harassment or intimidation threats or whatever, an employee has 180 days to file a claim. Now, the most important thing is an employee needs to document evidence.
What does that mean by document? Write it down or take photos or what?
Well, there's all different...
Ooh. Bill, what's happening?
We're getting some feedback there. I don't know what that is.
You know what I think we better do, Bill, at this point with the feedback? I know you and I discussed this. I know you've been using a headset. Maybe what we better do... No. All right. I think what we better do is... You feel it's okay now?
Yeah, I think it's okay.
Okay. All right. So go ahead.
All right. What I was saying is that whether either of the sets of laws that I was talking about, the offensive ones or the defensive ones, there are very strong protections for employees whose rights are infringed upon. And the way, though, you want to be able to try to prove it. So if you have coworkers that could stand up for you, if you're making, for instance, a safety complaint, the best thing to do is keep a copy yourself and have a witness when you turn it in, or copy someone else. If you're seeing corrupt practices on your computer, that gets to be a little more problematic, because some of the biggest corporations, many corporations now, have software where they can track or even prevent employees from downloading, like onto a thumb drive or something, information.
Mm-hmm.
What I've heard people do is they'll take like their iPhone into work, and if they see these corrupt things, they'll take pictures of it and document it that way. The other thing is if you have other employees who are similarly situated, there's strength in numbers. And if you have some witnesses, that really helps. But if, you know, it's the big, and the reason that it, number one, it's the right thing to do. But the laws are set up to make it easier for employees to defend themselves than in just like regular car accident cases or things like that. The standards of causation and things are different, which is good. But you still have to prove your case. And so you want to document. And and again, this gets complex based on the different laws that apply. And if somebody really wants to know about something, consult with a lawyer. And, you know, a lawyer ought to be able to tell you what to do and what not to do, especially if you're in one of the situations where financial fraud, waste, or corruption is going on using government funds, be it federal or state, where you could get, I think that if the government is involved in helping try the case with you, which is a good thing, you can get between 15% and 20% of what they recover. If you do it yourself, and you can get attorney's fees and all your lost wages and reinstatement and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But if you do it yourself, you can get more. I think it's 25%, something like that. But you really want to have, if your motivation should be to be doing the right thing.
Let me ask you this, Bill. When you say you should meet with a lawyer, and I'm someone who, with my experience as a deputy district attorney for 32 years with the San Mateo County DA's office in California in consumer protection, I'm very much a consumer advocate. But when you said you should see a lawyer, now here you are probably considered one of the maybe top attorneys who deals with whistleblower cases throughout the United States and railroad injury cases and whistleblower cases. That's one thing, but you can't be all over the place. What generally would you say for the average person, whatever state it may be, whether it's Minnesota, California, New York, or whatever, how should they go about trying to find an attorney who is competent in dealing with the whistleblower law?
You can call your bar association, or like you just mentioned, the California Board of Specialization could, for people in California, could say, here's a list of California lawyers that do this type of work. You could go online and, you know, check for that. But the main thing is, as I'm saying, it's usually if someone's objecting to unsafe behavior, it's because they think themselves or a coworker, or even the public's life is in danger or something's in danger. And if they complain about it, in a lot of situations, some companies don't want to spend the money for doing things safe or doing it right, and that's where most of the problems come from. There, the employee's not choosing really to want to do this. They get backed into it or cornered into it. And that's wrong, and if that happens, just start documenting right away.
Let me also let the listeners know, wherever you may be in listening to this program, whether it's California or one of the other states, let me give you Bill Jungbauer's office website, because you'll learn more about what his office does, and it might help you if you're in a situation along the lines of what we've been talking about. If you'd like to jot this down, it's www.yjblaw.com. It's all essentially one word, no spaces, www.yjblaw.com. And Bill's office also has an 800 number if you want to contact them and try to get some referral or whatever, 1-800-435-7888. 1-800-435-7888. Let me throw something out to you, Bill, that people might be surprised to hear. But We have had all of this discussion in the last many weeks about doing away with the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare. Does, in your opinion, as being an authority, maybe the biggest authority in the United States on whistleblower cases, is there any potential here with respect to the Affordable Care Act if we may see perhaps as many as 24 million people lose their insurance by the government taking a different course? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, first I would say two things.
Yeah.
One, I appreciate the nice things you're saying, but nobody can be an expert in every one of these laws off the top of their head.
I understand that.
And so let me just qualify that. Yes, I understand whistleblower litigation, and I really enjoy doing it. Secondly, for people that want to contact or look up our webpage, I've done, as far as research just for this program tonight, a significant amount of background research on all of the different laws, and I will put that on our website as soon as I can get that up. It may be in the next couple of days.
That'd be great,
so
Bill.
There'll be citings to all the different laws I was talking about, and for your listeners in California, I've got California information also. But so you ask about the Affordable Care Act. Well, that is one of the federal laws that has a whistleblower provision. And it's what this does, it protects employees who report violations of any provision of Title I of the ACA, including but not limited to discrimination based on an individual's receipt of health insurance subsidies, the denial of coverage based on a pre-existing condition, or an insurer's failure to rebate a portion of an excess premium. Now, what that means is if someone is working for a hospital, if someone's working for a doctor's office, or especially for an insurance company, and if you know your insurance company is anti-Affordable Care Act, you could be documenting all this information, and you and if there's any other employee, you could do that. Now, I would also caution and say, if you're going to make a complaint in what I call the offensive type whistleblower law, where government funds are being misused and there can be a financial recovery for reporting it, you can't make it public until the court unseals it. And you don't want to make it public. You don't want to do it on Facebook or anywhere else saying, hey, I'm going to do this, because somebody might steal your idea.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, now the more interesting aspects of this are you have to go back and really dissect the act and say what are some of the things that are going on. One of the questions I was thinking about just today as I was preparing for this, when I read the Affordable Care Act coverage, I'm wondering, what if somebody in our government, for instance, starts firing a bunch of people that work on the Affordable Care Act before the Affordable Care Act is gone? They may, underlying may, have whistleblower rights on that if they complain about it and say, hey, I want to do my job, I want to do this, especially if they've complained and say this elimination of this is, let's say you work in state government or work for an insurance company, and you say, hey, the Affordable Care Act is much better than anything that's going to be proposed, and somebody fires you or disciplines you or says don't do this. Well, document it. Mm-hmm. You may have rights under that.
Let me ask you this then. If that were to take place and someone was fired, the concern I have for the employees generally speaking is, if you are fired, if you have great concern for public protection, etc., but you are fired, make the point of reporting this misuse of funds or violation of the law, and you lose your work, you're going to be unemployed. Most people, I think, to be able to do that, don't have the economic wherewithal to be able to do it, Bill. And with lawsuits that take so long, generally, wherever you are, whether it's California, New York, the federal district court or whatever, they take a long time. How do people survive if they want to be gutsy and report safety violations, report violations of the law, etc.?
Well, there's two things. There's reporting that can be confidential, especially to the government, or under, again, if you're looking at the False Claim Act thing, it's confidential until a court unseals it, and then if they take the action, yes, there's a risk. You'd want to talk to a lawyer before you would do that to make sure you've got a strong enough case. But defensively, if you get fired because you did your job and said, hey, I think this is an unsafe action, or I think this is fraudulent or defrauding the government or government funds, be it state or federal or even local government, and you get fired for that, well, you're already there. And I guess the best way to really look at how a whistleblower case is to actually examine one, if you want to talk about one, at all those issues of, I had a case I just tried, recently in federal court in Seattle, and I could tell you about it, and that poor worker was earning a huge amount of money, and it took him years, and I could tell you what happened if you want to know.
If you could do that in a couple of minutes or so, Bill, that would, 2 or 3 minutes, because we are coming to the end of the statewide version of the program, which is half an hour.
Okay.
So if you can do that, and for those of you who are listening to the full live program or the hour program, if you get it via the NPR satellite on a delayed basis, we will be back for a second half hour. But go ahead, Bill, if you can, in 2 or 3, maybe at the most 4 minutes, give us a summary of what you're talking about.
All right, and give me a 30-second...
I will. You're darn right I will.
All right, Jeff.
Okay.
All right. As an example, I tried a case named Curtis Rueckert versus Burlington Northern Santa Fe Railroad. Rueckert was a conductor, and he was doing safety inspections on tank cars that he thought could be explosive or have explosive gas in them in north of Seattle during the time of the Winter Olympics. Long story short, he stops to do this inspection because he believed he was supposed to under the rules. He gets a call from some official saying, what are you doing out there? And he says, I'm inspecting these cars. And the official says, you don't need to do that.
This is an official with a railroad company,
yes,
right?
Yes. So the railroad doesn't. See, they have bonuses that are based on what's called velocity, which means if trains are moving fast, these guys get bonuses. If people take time to make safety inspections, that could affect their bonus if the velocity numbers go down. And so what they do is they call this guy in and fire him. So he's in that exact situation where he could earn, $80,000 to $100,000 a year. And so this poor guy, he goes, he makes his complaint with OSHA. OSHA finds in his favor. Burlington Northern Santa Fe says, so what? And they try to stall him off. And they do stall him off. He finally gets a hold of us, and I told him, hey, we're going to be in for a ride. He went and got a job. He went and got a job in North Dakota driving a truck in the oil fields to keep his family going while he did this. Well, we fight this forever, and it was just dirty as heck, and I could tell you all kinds of stuff about it.
Okay, but don't.
I don't want to say any cuss words.
No cuss words, although it increases the ratings, but no cuss words, please.
All right. Well, anyway, what happens, we end up trying this case. The railroad offers them like $75,000. The jury gave him $1.6 million.
Ooh, wow.
And that is, of course, but see, the problem is these big corporations, they don't care about money because they make so much, they'll try to squish people like a bug. Mm-hmm. And the only thing that slows them down is if people do fight for their rights. And so many employees are so afraid to make complaints, safety complaints, because they think, well, they could fire me for some vague law that's like a law that says don't be negligent. They've actually got a law that says that, or a rule, company rule, and they could fire somebody for it. It's crazy.
Yeah.
You know it is. You go to law school, you take a year and a half, and you still don't know what negligence is.
Well, yeah, that's true. That's true. Unreasonable conduct under the circumstances.
So
really,
the gist of it is, if people, if are going to file. If you get pushed into the situation, you got to fight. But you got to be able to document. You got to prove. Yeah. And the worst part is so many corporations now, because they say corporations are people under the law. I won't say that word.
No, don't. Please, please.
I'll tell you this. Yeah. I'll believe that corporations are people under the law when Texas executes one of them.
Ooh.
Okay? And corporations don't get executed in Texas very often.
Yeah.
So the gist of it is it's hard to fight these corporations because the managers, their bonuses, their money are depending on it. Mm-hmm. It's like that Wells Fargo case.
Yeah.
I mean, look at what happened there. Good people are being forced to lie, cheat, steal because somebody wants to make obscene profits.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing on the railroads. Yeah. Profits is everything. And safety is not first. Profits are first.
If you who are listening would like to get some more information about Bill Jungbauer's firm and information that he's going to put on his website that will be up in a couple of days or so, here's his website, www.yjblaw.com. It's all one word, www.yjblaw.com. And... since this segment of Your Legal Rights is funded by the National Board of Trial Advocacy, I want to give you the website for the NBTA if you'd like to jot that down and learn more about the National Board of Trial Advocacy. That's www.nbtalawyers.org. www.nbtalawyers.org if you'd like to learn more about it. It has several specialties. Bill's is, of course, that of a civil trial specialist by the National Board of Trial Advocacy. All right, everybody, let me give you our toll-free number. I'd like you to join us with your questions, your comments. Bill Jungbauer is a very experienced attorney. If you've been listening to the program, you know he has done a lot of work in the railroad employee injury area. He does a lot of work in the whistleblower area. Very experienced attorney. It's William Jungbauer. It's spelled J-U-N-G-B-A-U-E-R, but it's pronounced Jungbauer. He's a board-certified civil trial specialist by the National Board of Trial Advocacy, president and senior partner in the law firm of Yeager and Jungbauer Barristers in St. Paul, Minnesota. And so if you'd like to join us with your question, your comment, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. Support for Your Legal Rights is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The San Francisco Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation in both San Francisco and Marin County. And for a referral to a lawyer or the Bay Area Mediation Services at the San Francisco Bar, the number is 415-989-1616, 415-989-1616. If you're in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. You can call your own at 650-369-4149, 650-369-4149. Most counties in California have bar associations and lawyer referral services. You can call your own during normal business hours. Hopefully you'll be able to speak to a human being and tell them what the problem is. Tell them what your legal issue is, and they'll do their best to try to find an attorney who's experienced and set you up with a half an hour consultation. With minor exception in the state of California, for a half an hour consultation through the lawyer referral service, you will spend somewhere between $25 and $35. That money does not go to the attorney. It goes to the lawyer referral service to keep the service going. It's an outstanding public service, so I hope you don't need it, but it's there for you if you like. Additional funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the Family Law Section of the State Bar, the Trust and Estate Section of the State Bar, the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar, the California Applicants Attorneys Association, and the San Mateo County Bar Association. So I hope if you have any questions in the area of whether it's big corporations, railroad companies, or whatever you think might be a violation of public safety by whether it's the government or whether it's some corporation, I'd appreciate you calling in and talking with Bill. I think this is very important for you to have an opportunity to do so. Again, the toll-free number, 866-798-8255. Would you, with regard to the case you just told us about for Curtis Rueckert, where actually the federal court came in with over $1 million judgment for him, is that now final or is it still up on appeal?
Nope, that's on appeal. Mm-hmm. And one of the sad things that happens in our system, our legal system, is the government, some conservatives talk about tort reform.
Yeah.
Well, if you bring a case in federal court and yet you appeal it, you get less than 1% of interest on it per year.
Mm.
Now, if a big corporation, in the case of Mr. Rueckert's case, if their internal rate of return on their investments at Berkshire Hathaway, if they're anywhere near 10-20%, they pay for the whole case before it gets done.
Sure.
And that's not fair.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true. That's a real, real problem. Bill, you going back, I believe, in the year 2007, you appeared to testify. You're apparently the only attorney who appeared to testify in one of the committees of Congress with respect to the FELA, Federal Employers Liability Act. Why were you asked to come in and testify to that? And what was the reason for FELA? How do you pronounce it? Is it FELA or FELA?
We say FELA, and it's the Federal Employers Liability Act. That's the railroad law that protects, national law that protects railroad workers when they're injured on the job. They're not covered by workers' comp. They're
mm-hmm.
covered by this FELA.
I see.
And what I was, the reason I went to Congress was the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee of the House of Representatives is the committee that has jurisdiction over railroads. And I had a case a few years before that in Seattle, Washington, again against Burlington Northern Santa Fe, where an individual got hurt, and the railroad had these crazy rules saying, if you're going to be off injured, you must get doctor's reports whenever we tell you to, and if you don't do it as fast and as often as we tell you to, we could fire you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they decide they want to get some medical report from my client, and they tell him get the records to us, records from your doctor in 5 days over Memorial Day weekend. He couldn't even make an appointment, much less get a report from the doctor. Well, they fired him.
Mm-hmm.
And we ended up getting a good settlement for him, but I got ticked off, and I told the lawyer for the railroad, I said, you know, you guys got to stop this stuff. I said, somebody ought to take this to Congress. And what the guy said to me is, why would Congress give a hill of beans over about some railroad worker in the state of Washington? Well, I brought it to the attention of a congressman named Jim Oberstar, who happened to be the minority member at that time of the House Transportation Committee, and he says, Bill, if the Democrats ever get in Congress, if you can provide enough evidence that this is widespread, we'll have a hearing. Well, sure enough, the Democrats got in, and Oberstar became chairman. He says, you got any evidence?
Mm-hmm.
So I talked to everybody I could and tried to get unions to send in evidence. We got enough that Congress decided to have a hearing. And I was asked to testify because I had knowledge of it, and I even brought witnesses to it and presented the evidence, and so they asked me to do it. And unfortunately, some people, even that I know, opposed my testifying. I don't know why, but mm-hmm. we got the interesting thing is the law got passed, and that's the whistleblower laws that we're talking about for railroad workers. They got passed when George Bush signed them. It's one of the very rare times where they actually got something done, where you had a Democratic House and Senate and Republican president. And there was some good maneuvering that went on there, but it got passed, and it's the reason it's significant, it's the most significant piece of legislation affecting railroad workers since the FELA, which is more than 100 years old.
I've got a question that one of the listeners has brought to me. Actually, Martin, who helps me on the program, has just brought this in. It was one that Martin wrote down for me from a listener. Here it is, Bill. And by the way, for those of you who may have something that you'd like to present to Bill Jungbauer, please feel comfortable to call in. It's a toll-free number, 866-798-8255. Wherever you are in the United States, we are live on the internet at www.kalw.org. And so wherever, if you're listening to us on the internet anywhere in the United States, you can call that number. It is toll-free, 866-798-8255. And by the way, if you are interested in listening to this program again, it is available as a podcast free of charge, if you'd like to jot this down, at www.kalw.org/subscribe, SUBSCRIBE, www.kalw.org/subscribe. If you'd like to listen to it at some time, it'll be available to you by tomorrow. And here's the question, Bill. Being a whistleblower is easiest said than done, or easier said than done. If you do it, there's a good chance you will lose your job. Either you will be forced out or terminated. This is especially true in law enforcement, where there are, quote, codes of silence, end quotes. Obviously, codes of silence are unfair, but they cannot be eradicated. The whistleblower will be forced out because it's too dangerous to work in this environment. These toxic work situations probably deter whistleblowing. What comments do you have about that?
Well, there's a number of things. One, again, based on every industry or type of job, different whistleblower laws cover or don't cover employees. And if you work for the government, you have, and if you're working in state government or federal government, it makes a difference also. And so I'm very aware of codes of silence. There's all kinds of things like that. And, but really, so the first thing is that to answer the question, if somebody complains about something for purposes of the wasted money, I would not have someone do it or counsel someone do that unless we had dang near bulletproof case. And if you do have that, you check it out ahead of time, you know, then you'll be able to survive, and you've got a good chance of not only getting your job back, getting your money back, but in some cases punitive damages, in some cases all types of damages. But the code of silence in many industries is very difficult, and I'm very aware of it. But in America now, I mean, you see what's going on with our politics. Unless individuals step up and start doing the right thing, the public won't be protected. And like clean water, if you work for a big industrial company that makes chemicals, toxic chemicals, and you know that they're polluting or have polluted drinking water or the air, and if they're fudging their statistics, that's important. And, you know, you may live there. Your friends may live there. Eventually, if people don't step up and do the right thing, then we all suffer. It's kind of why if you have a union, you like to, you know, unions are important because people will stick together, and that's the only power that unions have, is if the employees do stick together. Individuals that work for corporations that don't have that type of protection need legal protection. And that's why the whistleblower laws are set up, and that's why they have strong recovery abilities to make it, to encourage people to take the risk of doing the right thing.
Let me take our first call, Bill. We have John. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello, John.
Yeah, you mentioned that you were the only person that were testifying in front of Congress there, Mr. Jungbauer, and my question would be is the two major unions that represent, a couple of major unions that represent rail workers are the former UTU and the BLET. They got a system, I understand, with a designated legal counsel. And my question is, why weren't they clamoring to join you in Congress, or were they?
Well, That is a pretty interesting thing because when I first brought this information, just for the listeners, the UTU and the BLET, the UTU, which is now called SMART-TD, generally represents conductors, trainmen, and some engineers. The BLE, which is now the BLET, represents locomotive engineers. And when I first was gathering information to try to get Congress to have a hearing, I got support from BLE lawyers that were designated counsel, such as myself. But the other union, the United Transportation Union, they're some of their top bosses, not the local union guys that I are and officers are so good. They actually didn't want me testifying, and they asked my partner at that time to tell me not to testify, and he actually consulted a lawyer to see if he could stop me from testifying. The designated, what's happened is, unfortunately, in any situation that you have, whether it's lawyers, companies, unions, you've got good people, and you'll get some bad apples. And sometimes bad apples do things that aren't in the interest of their members. And that's what's wrong. For instance, you ask about this designated counsel system. The BLE, which is the engineers, has now gotten away from designating certain lawyers because of scandals where their president went to federal prison. The United Transportation Union had two top officers go to prison because lawyers allegedly gave cash bribes to them. And the lawyers didn't go to jail, but just the union guys did. And unfortunately, this union, SMART-TD, has not opened up representation for its members to the best possible lawyers. It's only the ones that they select, and unfortunately, some of the lawyers that allegedly paid bribes are still on that list. Mm. That's a problem, and they need to clean that up.
Anything else, John?
No, that's it. Thank you.
Thank you very much for calling. We have Ray. Ray, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
Hello, Ray.
I'm in San Francisco. I have a quick question. Is it a quitam action when, like, the wrong person is holding office, or you think it's the wrong person, then you bring a quitam action to have it adjudicated if it should be that guy or the other guy, and sometimes they do take the guy out of office and put the other guy in? Is that also a quitam action?
No. What a quitam action, again, is what we call False Claims Act. And normally what that would be is if, let's say there's bridge work being done with either federal or state funds down there on, one of the highways. You guys have so much fun there with traffic.
Oh, it's wonderful. Yeah,
I know. Anyway, let's say it's going on. And let's say one of the contractors that's receiving federal or state funds does a bid and says, we'll do this intersection or this lighting system or whatever for $200,000, and they get it approved. And let's say they only spend $150,000 on it and keep the other $50,000 and cook the books a little bit.
Mm-hmm. If you don't know the situation like that, can I call you at your law?
Yes, you can, and do not discuss it publicly. That is exactly a False Claims Act situation where if you can prove that, and if you give the information first, you could receive a significant amount of money as a reward for helping the government. By the way, these False Claim Acts have paid out over $20 billion in the last 10 years.
And so you're saying that the False Claims Act with the $20 billion, B as in boy, billion dollars, some percentage of that, I think I've read before, it could be anywhere from 15 to 25%, actually goes to the person who is, let's say, cooperating with the government for something like this?
It can go to them if they provided material evidence and if they dot all the I's and cross all the T's.
I see.
If you get a couple of employees, sometimes it takes a couple to gather all the information, they would split it, depending mm-hmm. on what they do. But they got to be very careful not to talk about it or do anything. But, yeah, these types of projects, for instance, railroads, they almost never pay for a grade crossing. They have the federal and state governments do it.
Mm-hmm.
And if someone, let's say they pay $100,000 for a crossing, or they get that, and the railroad only spends $60,000 do it, they cook the books and spend the money on something else. If you're a railroad worker and know about that, that is a QTAM case.
Let me.
Do you happen to know what it's called when you do challenge someone holding office, what that's called?
If you're challenging somebody in office, that's a whole different type of a situation, depending, again, whether it's federal or state law. And that's really election law as opposed to what
but,
I
but
do.
But is that QTAM also? Because I know there's
no.
some.
No, QTAM technically, QTAM, as Chuck said, it's a Latin term that you're standing in the. You're bringing a case on behalf of the king. It actually goes back to, old England. You're on behalf of the king. You're trying to get his money back for him and for yourself.
Okay, thank you,
Ray. I think you asked for this again. Let me do this. Let me give you Bill Jungbauer's office website, law firm website, if you'd like to jot it down, and perhaps have a chance to talk with either Bill or someone else. In his law firm, there are a number of attorneys. His law firm, of course, is in St. Paul, Minnesota, but they do legal work all over the United States. And here it is, www.yjblaw.com, www.yjblaw.com. The office number, in case you want to call the office, is 1-800-435-7888, 1-800-435-7888. 7888. So if you'd like to get in touch with Bill's office, please do. I want to alert all of you that Bill Jungbauer is a certified civil trial specialist by the National Board of Trial Advocacy. You may have thought, gee, Chuck's really saying an awful lot of nice things about Mr. Jungbauer. Mr. Jungbauer, by the way, is merely a member of the Board of Legal Specialization. By that, I mean he is a certified specialist. He is not by any means, I want you to know this, he is not by any means paying any money to me or to KLW to be on this program. He is a guest on my program to discuss this. So this man, if you looked at his resume, it would take probably the whole program for me to give you all the stuff about the background of Bill Jungbauer. So I just want to make that very clear to you. This is a program where Bill is merely a guest, and he's a non-paying guest, everybody. So that's where we are. Now, I want to give you our toll-free number again in case you have a question for Bill. We have about another 7 minutes or so of the program. So if you do have a question, you do have something you'd like to bring up, whether it's a question or a comment or whatever, the toll-free number, wherever you may be in the United States, because we are on the Internet, www.kalw.org. We're on the Internet live, 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. Bill, we've talked about...
Could I add one thing if I could?
Yeah, please do.
I'd like to add one thing to the whole thing about the National Board of Trial Advocacy.
Yeah.
I'm honored to have been to be board certified. You know, it's of all the things on my resume or any other lawyer's resume. You know, everybody could say I'm the greatest. I'm Cassius Clay. Whatever you want to say. But really, board certification is like doctor's board certification,
mm-hmm.
and it's objective. Mm-hmm. You can't buy it. You have to earn it, and anybody can earn it. You have to try a certain number of cases. And the greatest thing that they do to protect people is when I applied to be board certified, they made me list not only lawyers that were plaintiff's lawyers and clients that I had, they made me list judges that I'd been in front of, and they made me list defense lawyers that I'd practiced with, and they actually went and interviewed them.
Mm.
And see, there's a lot of lawyers who will say, I'm really great and I've got all these other things, but they can't qualify to be board certified. Maybe they did something shady in their past and they've been disciplined by their Supreme Court. That is the kind of thing that the NBTA protects people from.
Mm-hmm.
And so You know, anybody could say, oh, I've got this, you know, and there's so many credentials you can get nowadays, and, you know, and I've got a, I don't put them all on mine, I put a bunch on. But I like to think of things that are objective, that any lawyer, you don't have to be rich, you don't have to be powerful, if you're, if you dot your I's and cross your T's, if you, and you got to take an exam, you got to take a second bar exam, and you got to pass. And I think that protects the public better than anything else. So if you're looking for a lawyer, if you could find a lawyer that's board certified by the NBTA, that's the gold standard.
Let me give you again, for those of you wherever you may be in the United States, you can find out who your board certified attorneys are by the National Board of Trial Advocacy if you'd like to access the website for the NBTA. It's www.nbtalawyers.org, National Board of Trial Advocacy Lawyers.org. So it's www.nbtalawyers.org. The same with it also in California. The California Board of Legal Specialization has a number of specialties. And if you're interested in finding out certain specialties, any one of the 11 in California, you can go to the website for the Board of Legal Specialization. And if you'd like to jot that down, it's www.calbar.ca.gov. Go to the upper left of your screen on your computer. You'll see legal specialists. Click that on, put in your county, and you'll be able to see with respect to if you're looking for someone who's in family law or maybe someone who's tax law or any one of the other 11, you'll be able to find out who those specialists are. People are very quiet tonight. Bill, you probably have lulled them to sleep.
I'm sorry. I should have used some of them cuss words. You know?
Yeah, you should have used the cuss words at the beginning of the program, because then we would have had more calls. But we've got, Bill, we've got about another 3 or 4 minutes. What have we not touched upon that you would like the listeners to know about in terms of protecting themselves or protecting others or trying to make our society a better place?
Well, the main thing is if you know of something that's wrong, you know, look into it. You know, find out, you know, can you prove it? And especially if you've tried to do the right thing at work or if you know of something that's being done wrong and someone won't listen or they're really cheating the public, cheating the taxpayers, or making our environment or our where we work and live unsafe, do something about it. Because you know Congress isn't going to do anything these days. And in fact, they're trying to eliminate a lot of these protections. The consumer, consumer protection whistleblower laws, and if they get rid of all these things, we're just going to have a much less safe world. And so, you know, the world you live in is in part due to what you do or don't do. I mean, a lot of people fought, you know, for the rights that we all have, but we have to exercise those rights. And there are protections, and you can weigh the pros and cons if you talk to an attorney to get some advice, and they'll tell you whether or not you know, you should do something or shouldn't. But if you get pushed into it, talk to an attorney first, fast, before the evidence gets destroyed. Many corporations, by the way, have automatic deletion of emails, and I found that. And so key evidence gets destroyed unless somebody writes what's called a litigation hold letter. So if you call a lawyer and say, hey, I've got a potential claim, the lawyer can contact that corporation and say, save the emails, don't destroy them, because they automatically destroy them and only save the ones that help their side.
Under what law is that?
That's under, it's under the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure. It's called ESI, Electronically Stored Evidence. The rules are now that if a party knows that there's reasonably anticipates that there's going to be litigation, they have to save evidence. And since almost everything is electronic now,
it's so easy
to hide, so easy to destroy.
Well, my approach for people is that even though they may not be lawyers, but we are all members of this society, that if you have a problem, I feel it's very important that you educate yourself. And that's why I'm always trying to suggest to people that they, if they do have a problem, they contact their local lawyer referral service. I mean, it's not just unique to California. I'm sure it's throughout most states in the United States that the bar associations would have lawyer referral services where you could have a half an hour consultation for a very reasonable amount. I'm a great believer in people educating themselves.
Well, Chuck, one more thing.
Yeah.
I guess maybe I didn't say this, but,
yeah.
You know, under these, most of the lawyers that handle this type of litigation do it on what's called a contingency fee.
Yeah.
Which means the individual doesn't pay unless they win.
Yeah.
So the lawyer has to believe, he or she has to believe they've really got a good case before they're going to want to take your time or risk you, because they're not getting paid for anything they do unless you win.
And I think what when people contact a lawyer, let's say whether it's through the Bar Association for a half an hour consultation, or if they Google a lawyer or somehow get a referral, certainly you want to find out. If my initial consultation with you, am I going to be charged? Is this a contingent fee case? What the situation is? Certainly with lawyer referral, this is a system whereby there is a very small fee, generally speaking, and that doesn't go to the lawyer. But otherwise, you would want to check with a lawyer to find out, are you going to charge me for this consultation? If we have, let's say, an hour or so of a consultation, are you going to charge me? Well, Bill, we're getting close to the very end of the program, and I want to say it's been a pleasure to have you on the air. You are a man of incredible energy, and I think, frankly, it's marvelous to hear you, really. So I want to thank you very much for joining us on Your Legal Rights. It's been a pleasure having you. William Jungbauer, of the law firm of Yeager and Jungbauer Barristers in St. Paul, Minnesota. Bill, thanks so much.
Thanks, Chuck, and thanks to your listeners, and best of luck to everyone, and let's all be safe out there.
And you let me know when you're going to be in San Francisco, because I want to have you on the program, okay?
It's a promise. I just love coming out there, and it's only a matter of last thing.
I don't have time.
Yeah,
I don't. No, we'll save it for the next program. Pardon me. Next time on Your Legal Rights, the topic is identity theft prevention and how to protect yourself from being a victim. My guest is San Mateo County Deputy District Attorney Vishal Jangala, a prosecutor of electronic crimes, including cyberstalking, computer hacking, and significant identity theft offenses. This segment of Your Legal Rights, oh, by the way, I must do this, program engineer Joanne Marr and production assistant Martin McClain. This segment of Your Legal Rights has been funded by the National Board of Trial Advocacy, which also funds the public radio satellite transmission of the program for national distribution. The website is www.nbtalawyers.org. Thank you for joining us on Your Legal Rights Public Radio, and I hope you join us next time. And certainly, if Bill Jungbauer gets out here, I'll have you come in and talk with him again. Thanks for listening, everybody. I'm Chuck Finney. Uh-huh.